You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Football practice is among us. The Razorbacks will begin their preseason practice on Friday on the U of A campus. A little after 5 o'clock, they'll practice into the evening hours on Friday night. They will practice over the next 5 days. They'll take a day off next Wednesday. They'll hit the field in full pads for the first time next Thursday, and then they'll have their first of two closed scrimmages next Saturday inside Razorback Stadium. We're already less than a month away from the start of the season when the Razorbacks play Cincinnati at Razorback Stadium on September the 3rd. Matt Jones joined today by Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph of WholeHogSports.com. Sam Pittman met with media members for a little more than 30 minutes on Wednesday. And I think one of the things that stood out to me, guys, was the comment that he made that we look like an SEC football team now. You go back to whenever he was hired in December of 2019, and really early on, I don't know if it was in his introductory press conference, maybe it was during the early signing date, the end of December 2019, I remember vividly him talking about the fact that the Razorbacks needed to get bigger. He said that it's a big man's football league and that you've got to have big people to win in the SEC. And I think a lot of people took that to mean that they needed heavier offensive linemen. But I think that there's more to that. They needed offensive linemen with more length. They needed heavier defensive linemen. They needed heavier linebackers. They needed taller wide receivers. And I think that's what he's talking about here, Scotty, that they look like a real SEC football team. Now, I think it's one of those deals that when Arkansas got off the bus in, say, 2020, and they went to a school like Auburn or LSU or Alabama, you could really see a difference. You could see a difference last year when they played against Georgia down in Athens against a team that looked like an NFL light team in the Bulldogs. But now I think that this year, when you see Arkansas get off the bus, they're going to look like the teams that they're going up against, at least physically. They probably still got a ways to go in order to match the talent of the teams that they're going to play, or some of them, say like in Alabama. But they're getting there. They're getting there under Sam Pittman. And I think that, you know, what you're seeing from a physical standpoint is really starting to look like the type of football team that he envisions having long term.
It's got to be such a breath of fresh air for some Arkansas fans. Like 3 years ago, your head football coach was like, no, we need to get our offensive linemen to drop some weight and get a little bit quicker on their feet. That didn't exactly work out the way that Chad Morris had hoped. And I think Arkansas has just kind of been looking to get back to looking the part since that point. It's taken a while. Like it takes some time. Obviously, strength and conditioning programs, like you can't impact, you know, a group of guys as large as a football roster like overnight. Like it takes, you know, sometimes it takes years and years and years. But I do think you're right. Like I think the first thing you want to do is look the part. Like you want to look good getting off the bus and, you know, have a little bit of an intimidation factor. Like, you know, that's what the big dogs in any conference do. Like they've got a little bit of an intimidation factor. Like you look at that guy and you look like he looks like you don't want to, you know, line up across from him. You know, you talk about it, it's a big person's league. I know Sam likes to say that a lot. And I think they do look a little bit better, you know, along the offensive and defensive line. But I think just being bigger, faster, stronger, I mean, I think that extends out to positions like wide receiver and running back too, and maybe corner. I remember in the spring, Kendall Browse was talking about how Keytron Jackson looks like he belongs in the SEC now. Like he looks like a legitimate big play threat in the SEC West now. And that, you know, he wasn't that last year. So, you know, he's been on campus for a little over a year. You know, maybe it took that year to get settled in, and now, you know, he's starting to see some real gains and real progress in terms of like your body size and your body type. Just being a big bodied receiver, I'm not sure Arkansas really has one of those guys. Like Morin Thompson might be your biggest guy in terms of like just size and girth and all that. But I think that's a good start. Like you're getting bigger, faster, and stronger. You always want to get bigger and faster. You don't want to just get bigger unless you could just sit on people. But few teams in the country can just do that without, you know, being stronger and faster also.
I'm glad you said what you did about the Morris offensive lineman, because they did recruit a different kind of offensive lineman. And one of the things that I think is really fascinating about this team is that you've got the heart of your offensive line. The three interior players are Brady Latham, Bo Limmer at guard, and Ricky Stromberg at center. All three of those came in together in the second year of Chad Morris's or the final year of Chad Morris's tenure at Arkansas. But what's really interesting to me about those three players is that they were recruited to play a very different style of offense. They were recruited to be a much different, you know, looking offensive lineman. And I think to their credit and to the credit of Jamil Walker and Sam Pittman and the offensive line coaches that he's had, Cody Kennedy and Brad Davis, those three guys have really bought into a different style of football. And I think that's one of the things that really fascinates me about this offensive line. It's like you've got three offensive linemen who came in not meant to play this style of football necessarily, and yet here they are, and all three of them are preseason All-SEC or preseason All-America type players.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like the way that Arkansas plays now and the way that Sam wants to, you know, run the football and prioritize, you know, running the ball first and letting the pass come off of that. It's like, I think these offensive linemen, like when they put some of these guys, like you mentioned, Ricky Stromberg, like I think he came to play for Chad and he was like expecting maybe to do one thing. And then it was like, eh, we're going to reverse course and do this. And I think there's nothing finesse really about Ricky or pretty about Ricky. Like I think Ricky and those guys want to be, I think they kind of take pride in being, I don't know, for the lack of a better phrase, like big uglies on the front line, like not doing anything that's really pretty, or they don't want to be pretty players. And I think the way that, you know, Sam is emphasizing just being mean and tough and nasty, I think that kind of that fits those guys more so than the finesse game that, you know, maybe they were brought in to play.
Myron Cunningham was part of that recruiting class too, Andrew. So that's four players who were part of last year's offensive line. That was probably the best in at least 6 years for the Razorbacks. I think you got to give some credit to Dustin Fry and Chad Morris for bringing in those offensive linemen. And then, like I said, credit to this staff for really developing them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that brings me back to something Sam said yesterday about team speed. He said there was two ways to gain team speed. You recruit it, and then you also develop it. And I think that works the same way for team strength. He didn't recruit those guys, but he's developed them to fit his style of offense as well. And I mean, you have to look no further than the second string offensive line and all the guys that he's brought in. And I think they go about 6'4", 340 across the board. I mean, they're monumental human beings. And so you can obviously see that's a point of emphasis in the guys that he didn't bring in, that they're also getting bigger and stronger.
Yeah, you look at players like Tykeus Crawford, who transferred in from Charlotte. Some big guys in this class that they just brought in, Scotty, like Andrew Chambly, Marion Harris. This is how it works at the, you know, the programs that kind of have these elite offensive lines like Georgia, where Sam Pittman came from. You bring in the guys that look like you want them to right away, and then you kind of develop them on top of that. And I think that's where you really see the elite offensive lines begin to form.
Yeah, I mean, you got to bring in some dudes on the offensive line that are just different, and like they have unbelievable foot speed for guys at their size. Because, I mean, you look, think about the guys that Arkansas has faced along the defensive line in the past few years, and I'm probably going to leave somebody out. I mean, Derrick Brown and Jordan Davis at Georgia. Like, those are just a couple of examples from, like, the last two or three years. Those are extraterrestrial beings on the defensive line, and you can't just have, like, any run-of-the-mill, you know, average-size offensive lineman blocking these guys. That's just not possible. Like, if you want to be an efficient, effective offense that, you know, actually puts points on the board instead of stressing your defense out to the max, you've got to recruit big people, because the people that are on the other side of the ball in those front seven are just, this league is just, it's a breeding ground for the next level. NFL teams want big humans that can run fast, and guys like Derrick Brown. And I remember there was another guy, I think it was like Big Cat Bryant at Auburn. I think I'm missing somebody else, but like Jordan Davis too. Those are just freakish.
Jeffrey Simmons. I mean, a ton of great defensive linemen that they've gone up against the last few years.
Yes. And I mean, LSU, they've been known for kind of secondary play and just having monsters on the D line. So you can't just have like your run of the mill average guy on the O line. He's got to be, you know, special in some way, whether it's length, foot speed, just, or some combination of both. And if you can find that, boy, you got to go nab a bunch of them.
I was on a radio show in Tulsa a couple of weeks ago, and they were asking me about AJ Green, and took the opportunity to talk to him or talk about him to talk about something else that kind of fits into what we're talking about right here. And it's team speed. I mean, it's, you see a lot faster players that they're recruiting, and there really are three players on this team this year that I'm kind of fascinated to see what they do with them offensively. Green as a running back, you know, we saw them use him as a receiver out of the backfield some last year. He had the big touchdown catch against Texas A&M that kind of blew that game open. Isaiah Satania coming in from Fayetteville. We've talked about him on this podcast before. An elite sprinter out of Fayetteville High School, a three-time state champion as a senior, the Arkansas Gatorade Track Athlete of the Year, set three state records as a senior, but he's not bad as a football player either. He led the nation in receiving yards for high school players as a senior last season playing for Casey Dick. And then another player, Jaden Hazelwood, coming in from OU, who's potentially going to be their number one target in the receiving game this year. He led OU in receptions, led OU in touchdowns, or tied for the team lead in touchdowns last year for the Sooners. Those are three players that I'm really interested to see as camp progresses. You know, what are some of the special ways that they're going to use them? And they're not going to show all their hands when the media is out there watching them. And I get that. You know, there are going to be some things that are put in behind closed doors. But I'm really interested to see how they use those three players in Kendall Briles' offense.
Yeah, I think the team speed that they have this year and coming in is going to allow Kendall Briles to be a bit more creative in his play calling, especially considering they have the number two quarterback might be the fastest guy on the team in Malik Hornsby. And so I think you're going to see a lot of shorter to intermediate passes to get guys open in space, and then they can have a deep ball threat in Bryce Stevens, Jaden Hazelwood, Satania, all those guys.
That's a great point about Hornsby. You know, they said last year he might be the fastest guy on the team, was a member of a really good relay team in Texas that included a running back from Texas A&M. Try running up against that, Scotty.
Yeah, no thanks. One of the things I was curious about yesterday when we talked to Sam was, you know, the questions were asked about punter and who's going to do kickoff duties and that kind of thing. I want to know who's returning punts and kickoffs. And Pittman mentioned that Hazelwood could be an option, you know, at punt return. We saw him do a little bit of that in the spring. That's an interesting idea, but to me, it's almost like putting Rocket Sanders back at kickoff return. I just don't think you want him taking, you know, Jaden Hazelwood can do everything, or like hypothetically, theoretically, he could do everything right on a kickoff return and still get his head taken off. Like, that's just not exactly a position that I want, you know, a guy that I think is going to be wide receiver one for me. I think Bryce Stevens is an option. I think Andrew just mentioned him a minute ago. He's got pretty good speed, and we've actually seen him return a punt in a game. Granted, it was against, I think, UAPB in a game that was over before it started, but still, nonetheless, he did it. So he's got some experience there. I think Satania is an interesting option too. Matt might have some insight on what Satania is like as a punt returner, a kickoff returner. I think AJ Green too, he got his feet wet a little bit with kickoff return last year. Didn't exactly go great. It looked like he was just a little bit timid. And I think some of that could have been just because he was a little bit behind the eight ball last year in fall camp. Then he got a concussion and was just kind of just trying to play catch up. He's got really good speed, but he wasn't able to showcase it because he wasn't super comfortable with everything that he was being asked to do. Still, nonetheless, that tells you how talented he is. They can get on the field still without, you know, being 100% solid. I think Matt Landers too is another guy that's really interesting at receiver, another speedy guy. Sam Pittman said that he can really fly and his body has changed a whole lot. He's matured physically a lot since Sam remembers him, I think, as a freshman. I think he's the transfer that started at Georgia and went to Toledo. So we don't really know much about him just because he didn't go through the spring, but that's just another interesting name. And I'm going to be curious to look at him and just kind of see what kind of a, you know, is he fluid? And, you know, is he a little bit choppy as a receiver? I just want to just kind of lay eyes on him because he's kind of an unknown right now, but he's, you know, Sam Pittman talked about him as a guy that's going to be in their top six at receiver when they were at media days last month.
When he was at Fayetteville, Satania returned a couple of kickoffs for touchdowns. He had one against Harbor as a junior where they ran a reverse to him, and he took it back 85 yards for a touchdown on the opening kickoff. And then he had a longer one as a senior last year. I think he's better as a kick returner than he is as a punt returner. You mentioned the Rocket Sanders comment. What Sam Pittman said was the coaches threw out to me Rocket Sanders' name as a kick returner, and I threw it right back at them. They don't want Rocket Sanders on the field in that role. And I think a lot of that has to do with health of their running backs. You know, Dominic Johnson's going to be kind of slow played a little bit coming back, you know, from this knee injury that he suffered during the bowl game against Penn State. He's not going to be available for at least the first week of practice. They said that he's ahead of schedule in his rehab. They're not sure if he's going to be available for the Cincinnati game, may not be available for the South Carolina game. But Sam Pittman did say that he thinks that Johnson will be available for the majority of the season. And that means that Rocket Sanders is going to be the featured running back during practice and probably during those first couple of weeks, which is interesting because Arkansas really hasn't had a feature running back. You know, you think about Traylon Smith last year, Sanders, Green, Johnson. Of course, Jefferson had a lot of carries in the run game. It's going to be interesting to see how they use Rocket Sanders from maybe a number of touches in these first couple of games until Dominic Johnson really gets, you know, his full strength back underneath him, because I think it's going to be a lot more than what Sanders has been accustomed to taking. But it's something I think that maybe they started to begin that process or that thought process in the spring, Scotty.
Yeah, they definitely prepped him in the spring. And I think he did a pretty good job, you know, just kind of shouldering the load at the running back position with Dominic out. It came to a point where I think early in camp, or early in the spring, when Arkansas realized that Dominic was not going to be able to be out there. And I think for Raheem, that was just, you know, kind of a sign that, okay, I've got to kind of put my big boy pants on here. Like, I'm not the oldest guy out here by any stretch, you know, in terms of just the offense, but he was pretty much in charge of an entire position group as a guy that's only played one full season. And I think he shouldered that. I don't want to call it a burden, but it's a lot for, you know, a young guy to take on. I think he did well. You know, I remember watching a couple of practices inside Razorback Stadium, and, you know, some of the young guys like James Joyner would and Rashad DeBinion would come up to him, and they would talk pass pro with each other, or, you know, just about what to look for in pass protection. And, you know, there were some drills, like it would throw some guys in the fire. They would match up with linebackers, and your only job is to pick up the linebacker, but you don't know where in the world he's going, and you don't have any other guys around you to, you know, as kind of a safety net. And Rocket was great with those young guys. And I think if he knows that he's the guy going in, and Sam said pretty much that yesterday, I think Rocket's going to be just fine. Like, I think he is an NFL caliber talent. And I don't think there's any doubt about it. And that I had that thought, you know, at certain points last season, definitely at the end of last season, I'm like, man, this kid could be really good. He stays healthy. He's going to be pretty special because he's got great quickness. He is stacked for a young guy. Like, really, he came in already really physically impressive, another offseason underneath him. But during the spring showcase, he bounced a run out left and went like 75 yards for a touchdown. Like, nobody was even close to touch him. He just burned everybody with speed. I mean, he's a special talent. And, you know, I think Arkansas's running backs room is going to be in pretty good shape so long as he can stay healthy. At that point, like, if he doesn't, like, AJ Green's going to be called on for more. Dominic Johnson too, but you don't know exactly what he can give you. And then I think a guy like Rashad DeBinion, he showed some flashes in the spring. He's a pretty shifty guy. Showed a little bit of promise in the spring. That could be another name to watch in that position.
I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these receivers that we've talked about having the speed. You know, the Isaiah Satania is a guy who we haven't mentioned a lot. Jaquelin Crawford out of OU, who, you know, came in with all this hype about, you know, his speed. Maybe a Hazelwood. You know, seeing those guys get lined up in the backfield and doing some things with them creatively. Again, I just think there's a lot of weapons that they have to use offensively this year. Johnson, we mentioned him, one of the, you know, the prominent names who's going to be out during the preseason, or at least for part of it. Torian Carter is another one. It doesn't sound promising that Torian Carter is going to play very much this year, if at all. Had a knee surgery, I believe, on May the 1st. We don't know what kind of knee surgery it was. You would have to think that if it was an ACL injury, there's no chance that he's coming back this year. So it makes you think that it was something else. But Sam Pittman says he'll be in camp, said he might not be in action. But by having him on the preseason roster, they'll be able to have him as part of team meetings. They really liked the leadership that he gave them, I think, off the field. They said that Isaiah Nichols has jumped in and really assume some of that leadership role on the field and in the room since the injury to Carter. The other notable injuries, I guess, Ja'Cory Turner, he's going to be in a green no-contact jersey. He had a shoulder injury during the offseason. Cade Renfro, the quarterback who transferred from Ole Miss, he has not been cleared yet after tearing his ACL. The thought is that he will not be on the preseason roster, that he'll basically join the team for meetings and other activities by the first game. Of course, you've got Manny Powell, Landon Jackson coming off of knee injuries. It'll be interesting to see where they are. Scotty, your thoughts on the injuries and what this team's going to look like, maybe at some of those positions where you have players, prominent players like a Torian Carter, a Landon Jackson, who you thought in the spring would potentially fit into the starting rotation. You know, who the players are behind them and what you're looking for them from the preseason.
Yeah, I think the one to Torian Carter obviously hurts the most. But I think in the spring, we also learned that when we found out that Torian was having, you know, so much success and producing so much and was like a pretty constant player in the offensive backfield. You know, we also found out that Isaiah Nichols was kind of like right there at his side. And I think Isaiah's kind of a guy that's maybe flown under the radar a little bit throughout his career here, just because there's been guys like Jonathan Marshall and John Ridgeway and some of those guys in the middle of your defensive line that have kind of, I don't know, maybe eaten up some of his snaps. I mean, for good reason, like there's no way you're taking those two guys off the field unless they need a breather or something. But I think Isaiah, with Torian being out, is going to be thrust into a leadership position. Isaiah's not the type that's just going to not ever say anything to anybody like he's trying to lead before. But I think this is a different type of leadership role that he's in that maybe he hasn't been in since he was a, you know, junior or senior at Springdale High School. I mean, it's a different ball game now. But it'll be interesting to see just how he leads maybe those interior defensive linemen. There's several new faces and names to get to know on that defensive line. I just think Torian, you know, being out likely, I'm going to say likely for the season. I mean, it's just like, I think what Matt said, it just doesn't sound optimistic that he'll come back. It's almost like they want Torian to be there just kind of as moral support, just kind of, I don't want to say in spirit because he's going to actually be there, but no, I think it maybe brings some good vibes to the room that, you know, he can't be there, but he still wants to be there, or he can't be on the field, but he still wants to be there for his guys.
Yeah, I think the Torian Carter loss hurts not so much because of what he did for the team last year, but how great of a camp he was having in the preseason, and he was really showing signs of progression, and he was making plays, being vocal about it, in your face about it, and he was really stepping up and becoming a leader of his own in that defensive line room. And I think Sam took a couple questions on the defensive line yesterday, and his one concern was the pass rush. He mentioned Terry Hampton, who I think is going to get some snaps from the Carter injury. And he mentioned that Terry Hampton was, I think, 6'1", 314, and has built-in leverage because he's a little bit of a shorter guy. And I think he also mentioned Jordan Dominick, another transfer, as a guy that they are hoping can step up and provide some pass rush for that D-line. And I did some digging into Jordan Dominick, and he had 7.5 sacks over the last two seasons and a 15% pressure rate, which was eighth best of all student athletes in a Power 5 conference in 2020. So, I mean, the pass rush potential is there, but they still have a few things to work on to see it actually turn into production.
I was going to say, I think a lot of people, when they focus on the pass rush, they focus on the defensive ends. And I think that, you know, this team's maybe going to be a little bit different. I think they're going to be able to get a lot of pass rush from the middle of their defensive front. And then I think they've got better cornerback play this year, Scotty, to where they're going to be able to get some coverage sacks that they weren't able to get a year ago.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, Isaiah Nichols is a big, strong guy too. And I think another guy that I've been kind of waiting to come along, it's almost like it's not quite to this point. Like, you know, you're kind of wondering when Hudson Henry is going to come around at tight end. It hasn't been this long, but Cam Ball is a guy that we've heard a lot about. Like, he's just, he looks the part, but apparently it just hasn't translated to this point, or up until, I guess, or through last season, I should say. I think he had a pretty okay spring, but Sam seems really optimistic about him. He's got tree trunks for arms, which is, it's always a good thing, you know. And you got to be able to get off blocks, man, in the SEC, because you're going against some big offensive linemen too. Obviously, like we just talked about earlier, you got to be able to handle those offensive linemen as a big D lineman too. Another guy I'm interested in is Landon Jackson. Now, Matt, you mentioned him earlier. He's another guy that transferred within the SEC from LSU, and he was dealing with an ACL throughout the spring. And I think the last couple practices that media members were allowed to go to, he was just getting, you know, reacclimated and was out there going through some drills with the helmet on and a knee brace and that kind of thing. So they don't bring these transfers in for no reason, especially like you're going and digging from LSU. I think, I mean, the kid was at LSU for a reason, I think, and LSU doesn't recruit scrubs on the defensive line. So I think there's some promise with him. I just want to see more, obviously, because we really haven't seen anything at this point, other than the speed was just a little bit more than walkthroughs for him, just because you don't want to risk an injury, you know, at the tail end of spring. But I think him you know, at least getting his feet wet at the tail end a few months back was, I think that was a step in the right direction, obviously.
I've got in my notes here that Pittman said Cam Ball would be a starter in a four down set if the season were to start right now. And to your point, and kind of what we were talking about earlier in the episode is how the players look. You know, they're going and they're not just recruiting. I guess what I'm trying to say is when they go to the transfer portal and they take a linebacker from a school that's had great linebacker play like Alabama, that makes me take notice. Or they take a cornerback from a school that's had great cornerback play like LSU, that makes you take notice. A great receiver from, you know, a school like OU. Those are the types of players I think that they're going out and they're really, you know, kind of building program with until they can get their high school recruiting up to a level of, you know, maybe some of those type teams. Don't know if they'll ever get to the level of those teams, but you know what I'm saying, where they can get maybe in, you know, consistently a top 15, top 20 type recruiting class out of the high school ranks every year. The portal has really changed things, and I think Arkansas has taken good advantage of that. I wanted to go back to offensive line comments for a minute. Sam Pittman, you know, we mentioned Bo Limmer. He said that Bo Limmer was really the player who had stood out to him this summer. He said there were others. He said, but Limmer was the one that he really wanted to highlight. Kept using words like freakish and freak of nature. And, you know, these were actually things that I remember Dustin Fry kind of describing Limmer as a player who really played through the whistle in high school. And it was one of the things that attracted them to him out of Tyler Lee in East Texas. And then I think the offensive lineman who will probably have the most eyes peeled to him during the preseason is going to be Tykeus Crawford. Probably going to play right tackle and right guard predominantly throughout camp. I think he's going to potentially get some reps at left tackle behind Luke Jones. And Scotty, you and I were talking about this last night. You know, he's probably that lineman that if he doesn't win a starting job, he's that first plug and play lineman. Kind of like what we saw with Ty Clary last year after he fell out of the starting lineup in week three. You saw him start at center some. You saw him start at tackle position some. Of course, he started the first couple of games at one of the guard positions. Crawford, I think there's a versatility to him that he can play right tackle. He could potentially play left tackle, although I don't know that it's as comfortable for him as it is on the right side. He can play right guard. This is a really intriguing player, and then you add on top of that, Sam Pittman's comments about him in the preseason have been, you know, really glowing. I think he really likes what they have in Tykeus Crawford, and that's what we expected to see. It took a little bit longer maybe for it to manifest itself here at Arkansas, but you know, this is what we expected to see out of Crawford whenever he transferred in.
Yeah, if you hear Sam talking positively about an offensive lineman, I mean,
makes your ears perk up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody knows Sam's background. I'm not going to go through it, but I mean, there's reason to be optimistic if Sam is talking about a guy, if Sam is talking about someone pretty glowingly. And I'm not sure that we can call Tykeus Crawford a Swiss Army knife just yet. I mean, haven't seen just a ton on the field to this point, but I honestly think that he could push Dalton Wagner for a starting position at right tackle just like right away. He's just had injury issues, and like his injury history, like nothing really is telling me that he's going to be able to stay healthy for an entire season. And Sam even said as much too. Like I thought he was pretty blunt about it. It's like, we just don't know that he can play every snap of every game. And that's the truth, man. So you got to have a backup plan there. And I think Tykeus Crawford is a pretty damn good backup plan right now. And he can play, you know, they'll start him at right tackle to begin camp. Not saying that he'll be starting at right tackle, but that's where they're going to begin him, like where he's going to be getting his reps, and then, you know, right guard. And, you know, I think if push came to shove and something happened to like Luke Jones, Matt, like you said, I think he's a perfect option to slide in there. I think you need a guy at a premium position. You know, that's your cornerback's, you know, blind side. And that's what, I mean, those NFL left tackles, man, they make the money because that's, you know, more often than not, their quarterback's blind side. And I think you need a guy at that position. Like if something, like I think they got a good guy in Luke Jones, but if something were to happen to Luke, you need a guy that's, you know, got all kinds of potential, like pro type potential. That's got good feet, good hands, strong, can move his feet. And I just think that you got to have a, you know, one of your best linemen, if not your best lineman at that position. It's center, and then it's left tackle. I think those are probably your two most important positions. Not that any of the other ones or not. But I mean, I think you got to start on the outside or start on the inside with center. You got a good one there. And then left tackle, feel good about Luke Jones, but if something were to happen there, I think Tykes Crawford's the answer, because he's just, I think the kid's just filled with talent. And I think Sam obviously feels the same.
Yeah, I think between the measurables and the praise that we've heard of Tykes Crawford throughout the offseason, I think there's just no way he doesn't work himself into taking meaningful snaps at some point in the season. And I mean, Dalton Wagner has been a serviceable right tackle, but I think if the Arkansas offensive line could be elevated to another level, it's going to be with a guy like Tykes Crawford and not Dalton Wagner, who's in his sixth year. You know, when you're playing offensive line for Sam Pittman, I think he's looking for guys that are 3 years, 4 years, and then off to the NFL, not sixth year seniors coming back to play another season.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. You can visit them online at gocallbud.com.
Bud Anderson is proud to be the official heating and cooling provider for the Arkansas Razorbacks. This partnership will support all Razorback athletics for over 400 student athletes across 19 sports. Whoopee!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
We're well into our preseason preview podcast, and we haven't mentioned KJ Jefferson. And I think that probably tells you a little bit about why people feel good about this team, is they've got a experienced quarterback coming back. Sam Pittman said in his meeting with reporters this week, you know, you've got the three coordinators coming back. There's all this talk about the three coordinators being back. I want to see it on the practice field. I want to see a crisp, clean practice where you don't have fumbles, where you don't have players missing assignments. And I think it starts, at least maybe the confidence in this team starts with having that starting quarterback returning in KJ Jefferson. And it just gives this preseason camp a different feel than I think we've had in a lot of years. I mean, you know, there were a lot of years where you didn't know who your quarterback was going to be. There was the COVID year. There was last year when it was, okay, what is Sam Pittman's first practice going to look like? Kind of a routine practice going to look like after the hurdles that they had to go through to get to the 2020 season. This one, there just aren't a lot of questions, I feel like, going into this practice. Yeah, you know, there's probably going to be some position battles. You know, there's some questions about, you know, who's going to be the pass rusher. But there's just a calmness, I think, and a peace about people when it comes to Arkansas going into this preseason that I can't remember. I think a lot of it has to do with having a returning quarterback and having a real veteran coaching staff that you feel confident in.
Yeah, it hasn't been like this definitely since Sam was here. Maybe you can go back even further too with like Nick Starkle and Ben Hicks. Like there was a competition there, and we're thinking that one guy was better than the other. The other one started first, and then, I mean, it was just kind of a mess. But what KJ did last season was he quieted the doubters, and the questions surrounding the offense are not about his ability or his talent level or whether he can go lead your offense and win you games. Now the questions are like, okay, so now Treylon Burks is gone, and so what's your connection like with your other receivers? I think that's a really big testament to KJ just to go out in your first year as a starter and just completely shut everybody up. That's pretty impressive, because normally you can have a guy go out and have a pretty good season, but you can look back at these certain points and be like, but this happened, or but this happened. There's like none of that with KJ, I don't think. And I think maybe if you do have a concern, it's maybe with the connectivity with those receivers. And, you know, maybe it's not A1 like you would like it, like maybe him and Traylon were, and maybe that leads to KJ tucking the ball and running and maybe taking some shots to his hips and knees. That could be a little bit worrisome, but that's a – I don't know. That may be a negative Nancy way to look at it, but I do think the connection with the receivers, I think you want to see that at least – you know, show signs early on that your work throughout the summer is paying dividends instead of, you know, you're kind of starting from scratch day one. I just think you want to see a little bit of promise in terms of like the connection with those guys. Otherwise, you know, I think everything's good with KJ. I mean, he's that deal last year where he came to his press conference wearing the wife beater and people were talking about his weight and all that stuff. That's history, man. He's light years away from that now.
He said in Atlanta that he feels like he's lost some weight. He said he feels a lot better than he did a year ago. Arkansas has been picked to finish third in the SEC West behind Alabama and Texas A&M. And I think on one hand, you know, you look at that and you say, well, they played within 7 of Alabama last year and they beat Texas A&M. And they're not going to play either of those teams on their home fields. They get Bama and Fayetteville on October 1st and they play A&M in Arlington the week before. So you kind of like their chances to potentially take another step in terms of being competitive with those teams. But on the other hand, you look behind them in the SEC and you say, well, you know, LSU, they're LSU. They've got a really good head coach coming in Brian Kelly. I know it's his first year. They're picked to finish ahead of Ole Miss. And you know, we've seen what Ole Miss has done in its 2 years under Lane Kiffin, been pretty good. Was really good last year under Kiffin. And then you look at the non-conference schedule, they play BYU and Cincinnati, a couple of really good non-Power 5 type teams who, by the way, are going into the Big 12 next year. I know a lot of people are saying Arkansas isn't playing a Power 5 team out of conference, but they're playing two teams who will be Power 5 teams by this time next year. I guess where I'm going with that is it's so hard, I think, to forecast their schedule. I read that this week that they're the only team that's going to play 12 teams that played in the postseason a year ago. And, you know, I know a lot of times people talk about Arkansas schedules the most difficult and this and that. But, man, when you look at, you know, the fact who they play in the SEC West, it seems like they hardly ever get Vanderbilt. Or when they do get Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt's either good or Arkansas's bad. This is a tough schedule. And it's really hard for me to kind of get a feel for where they're going to be this year. And I think that there are all these expectations that, okay, you've got this 9-win team and now you're expected to have, you know, an 8-win regular season or a 9-win type season every year, or even build on that. Man, it's really hard to do that in the SEC. And so, you know, I look at this team and I think that in some ways, I think they're going to be better. I think offensively, they've got the chance to potentially be better than last year. They're going to have to figure out some things in their passing game with Burks gone. But I think they've got some receivers to, you know, potentially do that by committee. Defensively, yeah, I wonder where they're going to be. I think they might take a little bit of a step back because of some of the players that they lost from last year. I guess that's a long-winded way of saying I have a hard time trying to figure out where Arkansas is going to finish. And I'm glad it was somebody else who had to vote them third and not me, because that would be a tough vote, I think.
I think as long as they're in the SEC West, they're always going to have one of the hardest schedules in the country. And maybe that lightens up when OU and Texas join and they split off into the pods or whatever. But as of right now, the SEC West is the premier division in college football. And I think it'll stay that way for quite some time. I mean, there's just no off weeks in the SEC. I mean, maybe if you get Vanderbilt on a down year. But other than that, I think every week is going to be a dogfight. And I think that Sam Pittman is the perfect coach for Arkansas in the way that he's never going to let them let up. That just goes to show how competitive he is and how his teams have remained competitive.
And there's no easing into the schedule. I mean, you look at it, they play Cincinnati week one. They were in the playoff last year. I know they lost a lot of, you know, really good players off of that team. They lost Desmond Ridder. They lost Sauce Gardner. You know, some other really good defensive players off that team. But I think Luke Fickell's probably recruited pretty well off of, you know, the success that they've had the last 2 or 3 years. They play South Carolina. A lot of people are talking about South Carolina could potentially be the number two team in the East this year. Missouri State, we know about Petrino. They've been in the FCS playoffs the last 2 years. I was talking to a friend of mine who used to play at Missouri State a couple of weeks ago, and he said, when you watch them now, they don't look like the Missouri State teams that used to come into Arkansas in 2009, 2011. They just look like a completely, you know, different team, a more physical, more prepared team. They're still an FCS team. They're not going to match up toe-to-toe with Arkansas. But you know, when you've got Petrino over there pulling the strings, it's just one of those games that says, it makes you kind of pause. And A&M, Alabama, at Mississippi State, then you go to BYU. There's just no easing into this schedule like I think there was a little bit last year when you had Rice and Georgia Southern sandwiching that game against Texas. This is a real gauntlet that they're going to face over the first 7 weeks, Scotty.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the two of the first three games last season. I think that's where you're most grateful for KJ's growth, right? Like if you're not starting off the season this year with Rice, or you don't play a Georgia Southern type team in week one. Like you got Cincinnati that was in the playoff not too awful long ago. And I think that, like I said, I think that's where you're happy that KJ has matured the way that he has, because there's not a, hey, I need a game to shake off the nerve or get the nerves out type thing. Like you gotta be A1 from game one, or you're gonna catch a loss pretty early, and then everybody's gonna be talking about you, trying to figure out was all of the momentum that you built from last season all throughout the offseason, was it all just wiped away with one game, and what kind of team are you actually gonna be? I think Arkansas would be ultimately probably be fine if it did drop its first game, because of some nerves or something like that, just because I think Sam's good about rallying his team, putting a chip on their shoulder and be like, hey, you got to go do this, kind of like you're back against the wall. But I think that's why, these practices that we're about to go see over the next few weeks are so important, because like you don't get a, you're playing the last NCAA football video game, and you can get FCS directional school from, FCS Midwestern state or whatever in your first game. It's Cincinnati, man. Like it's a real game. And even the game in week three against Missouri State that you're circling as a win already, not going to be easy. I mean, we know firsthand the guy on the other side's always got some tricks up his sleeve. So yeah, it's going to be tough, man. But I think that's where you're happy that you've got the leadership that you do with, KJ. And then on the defensive side with Catalan and Bumper Pool.
I remember before last season, I think it might've been at the Little Rock Touchdown Club, Sam Pittman made a comment. He said, we're playing a Southwest Conference team this year. There was a little pause and he said, and it's not the one that you're thinking about that we're playing first. And there was all of this concentration on Texas going into last season. And I think you kind of saw that a little bit against Rice in the first half. I mean, who would have ever thought when Arkansas was stinking it up against Rice at halftime in the season opener last year, that it was going to be a 9-win team. And so I almost think that there is some benefit to playing a team like Cincinnati in your first game, because that's the game everybody's talking about anyway. And so that's the game that, I think it helps you focus for that season opener more so than playing the Missouri States and the Rices and all these other teams that they played in the season openers. You're playing a big boy football team, a brand name football team. You're going to have the SEC Network pregame show there. There are going to be a lot of eyes on that game. And I think there's a real benefit to playing that type of game week one versus in week two, week three.
Yeah, it's crazy how far they have come in just 1 year. I remember my first game that I covered for Whole Hog Sports was the Rice game last year, and they're getting booed at halftime. And I think Scotty leaned over and was like, welcome to the beat. And I was like, oh, so this is what it's like. And then, here we are. They won the Outback Bowl. They're projected to finish third and all in a year's time.
Yeah, I'm glad too that I didn't have to vote for preseason Rankings like in the divisions and do the projections thing. I'm terrible at that anyway. I think I expected Arkansas to be placed third just based on the positive trajectory that Sam's got this program on. And like, I don't think you can undersell momentum. Like that's a big deal. You're going into spring ball off of a bowl win, feeling better about yourself versus going to that bowl game, losing. And you're just kind of like, all right, here we go. Like just another year, but you're like, there's a little bit more bounce in your step there. I'm not sure that Arkansas will finish third. I could probably see something more along the 4-5 spot. Like I think the West is going to be better I'm just like, Auburn is picked seventh. And Auburn's got some talented guys too. I know there's a lot of pressure on Brian Harsin, but I just can't imagine that Auburn finishes seventh. And so there's got to be some kind of movement there. I just think the West, it's just going to be a beast again. And, you know, if Arkansas improves the way that Sam and everybody's saying they are, then they should be able to hold their own. I mean, like Matt mentioned earlier, they went toe to toe with the two teams that are projected ahead of them this season. They went playing them really well last year. So just about taking another step, like you've taken a step and you kind of brought yourself back to relevancy. Now it's time to take that next step.
Well, they did say within 7 points of Alabama, but I also think that was maybe the fourth or fifth worst defensive performance in school history. You do have to kind of consider that in as well when you talk about that game. I can't wait for 2025 when you've got OU and Texas in the league and we're going to have a new schedule. We're not going to have divisions anymore. And I just think that you're going to have a lot more balance, I think, in the schedule that these teams play, because we talked so much about the West. I mean, in the SEC West this year, you're going to have a coach making $5 million or more per year finish seventh in the West. That's where we are right now in the SEC West. You've got big-name coaches at pretty much every school. You know, I think Sam Pittman has entered that conversation, you know, at least in terms of, you know, coaches that you would probably rank, you know, probably 25, 30 best coaches in college football. I'd say seven of them are coming from the SEC West right now. And there's just such an imbalance to the SEC schedule right now, because it kind of feels unfair that you have, say, your second, third best team from the West playing the type of schedule it has, and you have the second and third best team from the East, whether that be Tennessee or South Carolina or Florida, playing the type of schedule that it plays. There's a real imbalance to it that I think the league knows that it has to get straightened out. I guess that would lead me to who do you think Arkansas's three permanent opponents would be if that proposal's passed?
Oh, gosh, I would have to think that it's not about money. It's about how much money, right? So Texas has probably got to be in there.
I think absolutely. And
I would think that they're going to keep pushing the Missouri thing just a little bit.
I do too.
Because of proximity. And then I think a team like Ole Miss or LSU, I think, makes a lot of sense. Like those are three teams that it's tough to play them every year, but I mean, Arkansas is already playing two of them. So just bring on Texas. Arkansas fans will be fine with playing Texas. Arkansas will be fine with playing Texas too. So I could see those happening. And then, you know, when Arkansas and Ole Miss play, all hell is bound to break loose. And the weirdest thing that you have never yet seen in your life is potentially like about to happen. And so I just think from an entertainment standpoint, I think Ole Miss would be a really interesting permanent for them.
Yeah, I think you could probably, by the way, the Ole Miss, I wrote a story about, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago about the history of that series. Some crazy things have happened in Arkansas Ole Miss. I mean, some real crazy things. In the 1930s, I think they played a game in Memphis where Ole Miss had a player intercept a pass and take it back for a touchdown, and he thumbed his nose at the crowd as he went into the end zone. And when the gun sounded, there was a brawl on the field, benches were thrown, and people were hospitalized, and there have been some weird stuff in that series that goes back quite a ways. I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that Arkansas and Ole Miss is the longest continuous series that Arkansas has right now. It's been going on every year for over 40 years. But I think there's probably six teams that you could make an argument for Arkansas playing every season. You mentioned Missouri. Proximity, really, I think proximity and the fact that neither has a rival within the conference currently, that's what maybe fuels that conversation, although Texas coming in changes that some for the Razorbacks. You've got the Texas angle. You know, I think Greg Sankey's eyes were really open to what Arkansas-Texas means when he stood on the field and he experienced that in Fayetteville last season. A&M, I mean, obviously you're talking about a series that goes back over 100 years against the Aggies. OU is interesting from a proximity standpoint, and because OU comes into a conference where it doesn't have as many rivals. It does have a history with A&M. Obviously, it's got the Red River game with Texas. A lot of people probably don't think about the fact that OU and Missouri is a real long-standing game that began in the Big Eight. LSU, Ole Miss, like you said. I could see it going any number of ways. And we don't know what the schedule is going to look like. We don't know if it's going to stay at 8 SEC games. We don't know if it's going to go to 9 SEC games. We don't know if there's going to be one permanent opponent, three permanent opponents. But there is change coming, and I'm really happy to see that. I guess, you know, my personal preference, I kind of like the thought of playing Texas every year. I like the thought of playing OU every year. I think that there's a lot of potential there, probably being raised right along the Arkansas-Oklahoma border. That influences my thinking some. And I like the A&M game, although I think that game is going to feel a lot different when it moves out of Arlington. There's just going to be a different feel whenever it moves back to campuses like it's expected to do by the 2025 season.
Yeah, I think OU makes perfect sense from a proximity and recruiting standpoint for how often that they have to go up against each other for top recruits in that Arkansas-Oklahoma area. I think it would be beneficial for either school to play against each other every year so that, you know, one can say that they have the upper hand that year or whatever.
Could you imagine, Sam, if Texas and Oklahoma are Arkansas's new permanent? So, like, Sam would be like, well, of course, they just came into the league. We just got added two new teams to the league. And, of course, they're on our schedule every single year. I think he would probably – he's probably expecting that to happen. I think Texas is a legit possibility, obviously, mm-hmm. for the very already laid out their reasons. I really think that the Ole Miss one – like, I just think you have to keep that one just – that game is always super entertaining, and it's one that I always look forward to. It's either going to be really high scoring, or you're just going to see something that you just haven't seen, or it's going to be Pac-12 after dark, but set in either Northwest Arkansas in the Ozarks or, you know, somewhere in Mississippi. Like, it's just, I think it's just a really, really intriguing game for people that maybe are outside of the league footprint too. I think it's pretty intriguing.
I think the thing you have to look at with the as they're putting this together is who the other teams consider to be their rivals in the games that they want to maintain. We look at it so much from, you know, an Arkansas standpoint, rightfully so. You know, you look at Ole Miss, they're going to want to keep playing LSU every year. Obviously, they're going to keep the Egg Bowl. I think if you ask Ole Miss people, they want to play Alabama every year. There's a pretty good little rivalry there between Ole Miss and Auburn. And so it's every school has got – nobody's going to get everything they want. They're going to be.
They actually played the Magnolia Bowl against LSU, right? Like, that's an actual trophy game.
Magnolia Bowl. That's right. Yeah, that was the game that the Billy Cannon Midnight Run or Halloween Run occurred in 1959. One of the great moments in that rivalry. So it's going to be interesting to see how the SEC schedules. Greg Sankey says there's no arbitrary deadline to meet necessarily. But I think most people believe that there's probably going to be some finality on that within the next maybe 6 months or so, maybe even before the end of this season. Of course, they've got the 2023 schedule that they've got to announce probably before they look past that and put the 2025 schedule and beyond together. You can come to WholeHogSports.com all weekend. We'll have lots of coverage from the Razorbacks practice. Scotty, Andrew, Tom Murphy, Bob Holt, myself, we'll all be out there. We'll have video of the practices. We'll have the press conferences on our website. And of course, all of our thoughts and reports will be available there too. And beginning on Monday, we will start our daily preseason podcast. We did this last year. It'll be a daily preseason podcast where we'll talk about what we've seen at practice the day before or the day of in some instances. And we'll do a position analysis for the first 2 weeks. And then the final week, we'll take a look at a deeper look at some of the opponents that Arkansas is going to play early in the year. We had a lot of positive feedback about that last year, and we're excited to bring that to you again beginning on Monday. For Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us on the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.